Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. In this series, we will be talking with organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who are working both to challenge the Trump administration and the circumstances that created it. It can be easy to despair, to feel like trends toward inequality are impossible to stop, to give in to fear over increased racist, sexist, and xenophobic violence. But around the country, people are doing the hard work of fighting back, coming together to plan for what comes next. This series will introduce you to some of them.
I'm Jesse Hagopian. I teach in Seattle high school, and I am an editor for Rethinking Schools magazine, and I'm active in our union with the social equality educators.
Excellent. And so the school where you were teaching in Seattle in particular has had a lot of activism from students as well as teachers in recent past, hasn't it?
No doubt. I mean, it has a legacy of activism where it was the school where Martin Luther King spoke at when he made his only visit to Seattle. And we have the graduates of our school founded the first chapter of the Black Panther Party outside of California here in Seattle. And it's a legacy we're proud of and that we're seeing, I think, revived. You know, earlier this year, our football team, the entire team took a knee during the national anthem in protest of police abuse, and then it spread to the girls volleyball team and girls soccer team and the cheerleaders and even the marching band. Everyone was taking a knee to raise awareness. And then after Trump's election, there were some 5,000 students across the district or more that walked out, including large numbers at my high school. And it is exciting to see a new rebellion amongst young people today.
Yeah. And talk a little bit. I know I've been seeing and hearing from teachers who are having a hard time figuring out how to talk to their students about Trump's election. So can you talk a little bit about what it's like being a teacher in this moment and talking to your students about what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the first example I want to use is from my son's school, because the day after the election, a young Muslim girl came in, and she hadn't yet heard that Trump won the election, so she found out there at school. And when she found out, she fell to the ground and was pounding her fists into the ground and crying, and she was just terrified. What could happen to her and her family, whether they're split apart or fears of violence. And I'm just so proud and of what my son's teacher did. She just decided right then and there to gather all of the classes at the grade level and bring them together, and all the families who were there for drop-off, and just hold a discussion and allow kids to discuss their fears and their thoughts, and let them know that this was going to be a safe place for them, that you know, and that's an example that I try to use to have my classroom be a place that facilitates dialogue, that allows the kids to discuss the fears and anxieties they have when they hear Trump's plans for banning Muslims, for deporting immigrants, you know, all of his atrocious sexual assault exploits, and, you know, his fear-mongering and hatred and bigotry of all kinds. The students need a place to talk about it, and so I try to facilitate that, as well as letting them know my classroom is a safe place. Even on the door, all the teachers in my hallway have put up signs that say, you know, this is a safe place for our students, and a place where we will oppose, you know, homophobia and sexism and racism and xenophobia and Islamophobia, and we want to communicate that message clearly with our students. And then we also have to do it in the curriculum. And I'll just say that it's so critical that our curriculum is talking back to the textbook that too often just glorify American history without engaging kids in critical thinking about the real challenges and forms of structural oppression that have been perpetuated throughout U.S. history, and allowing them to dig into the curriculum, into the history, to figure out how we arrived at a moment like this, I think is really crucial to helping support them right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you mentioned the caucus within the union. The Seattle Teachers Union had a strike fairly recently, and I believe one of the issues at stake there was being able to think about and talk about racial justice in particular in the schools, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Last year we went on strike for 5 days, and one of the main demands was about having race and equity teams in every school. And the district opposed us and didn't want to add any race and equity teams, and we wanted them in every school building. By the end of the strike, we had negotiated adding 30 race and equity teams across the district, which was really critical to, I think, advancing social justice education in Seattle for a number of reasons. I mean, one, it brought us together with the community. You know, some of the key leaders in the Black Lives Matter movement signed on to a letter supporting our strike because of wanting to fight for racial justice in our schools. And then this past fall, this October, we were able to build on that victory, and we actually built a monumental action. It was called Black Lives Matter at School Day, and it started with a few teachers, but it mushroomed into an action that some 3,000 out of 5,000 teachers in Seattle wore Black Lives Matter shirts to school, and many hundreds of teachers taught lessons about structural racism and the Black Lives Matter movement that day. And it really helped to expose the fact that there are a majority of us in the school district that see a much bigger purpose for education than just preparing our students for a low-wage job or shipping them through the school to prison pipeline, and that we want education to be about empowering our students to create a better future.
Yeah. Yeah, the Seattle strike was one of several teacher strikes in recent years. Can you talk about what's been going on about around and among teachers unions nationally and the challenge to the attacks that public schools have been facing?
Yeah, I mean, the assault has been brutal on teachers' unions across the country, and it's been bipartisan.
Right.
You know, it happened with, I think, an increased strength against our unions under George Bush with the No Child Left Behind Act, and it only accelerated under Obama and his race to the top scheme that would further link teacher evaluations and pay to test scores, destabilizing the workforce. And now we just see the attack unabated with Donald Trump's new proposed education secretary, Betsy DeVos. And I just know that everything that she has in store for our schools is absolutely wrong, and we have to build a vigorous opposition to her. I think that this attack is so strong because the richest 1% in this country know that teachers' unions are the biggest unions left in America.
Yeah.
They're one of the most concentrated sources of organized labor, and they have the ability to really transform the labor movement and our communities and make ties with parents, students, and teachers. And because of that, as a source of strength, they've also become a target.
Yeah. And talk a little bit more about how this, like when Betsy DeVos was nominated, I was almost struck that like she's a figure that's very associated with the school vouchers thing, which in recent years had kind of fallen by the wayside in favor of you know, this really big bipartisan push for charter schools. So can you talk a little bit about those two things and these sort of waves of privatization?
Yeah, I think privatization is the central aim of the corporate education reformers. And the Democrats over the last 8 years under Obama had worked very hard to give charter schools a liberal gloss and make mm-hmm. them seem as if they were part of a civil rights movement to rescue inner city kids, black and brown children, from a failing school system. When in reality, these charter schools often underperformed the public schools, but they functioned to siphon off money from the public school system into privately run schools. And they often have some of the most draconian discipline policies. So we've seen that black and brown students are suspended at much higher rates in charter schools from recent studies. And these schools were just the opposite of what the Democrats had promised. But they were able to cobble together a coalition for a while of people across the political spectrum who were advocating for these schools as an alternative to failing, what they called failing public schools. But I think that action really laid the groundwork for what we're seeing now with the revival of vouchers, which is just another strategy for privatizing public education, giving kids a limited amount of funds to use to go to any school they want, rather than actually investing in the public schools and making every public school a quality one with the resources it needs to succeed. And, you know, we live in a country that can find trillions of dollars to bomb people all across the world. They can find trillions of dollars to bail out the banks who sabotage the global economy. But when it comes to our kids' education, they want to try to do it on the cheap. And they want to actually try to make money off of it rather than fully invest in the schools that we would need to help our kids succeed.
And so I've been really struck in years, you know, when Trump announced Betsy DeVos, I kind of almost laughed. I was like, she has no idea what's coming her way. Because the movement around public education has gotten so big and so strong in the last couple of years. And so I wonder if you could talk about that and the way that students and parents and teachers are really coming together to fight for, you know, community public schools.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's really what we need. You know, the advantage of people like Trump and the rest of the 1% that they have is their immense wealth. The advantage we have is our numbers. And those numbers are really visible around education because it draws in so many diverse groups together into one place. It brings together labor with parents from all different backgrounds and students. And it's been a source of power for community organizing and social justice initiatives around the country. I mean, in Chicago, I think they have brilliantly organized social movement unionism strategies where they've organized the power of labor to get behind community issues, and then community groups have come and supported them when they're on strike. And with our recent action here in Seattle with the Black Lives Matter at School Day, it just took us all by surprise. You know, when we passed the resolution in our union to wear these shirts to school, we thought maybe a few dozen social justice teachers would wear these shirts and teach lessons. And then the orders went through the roof, and families began setting up tables at schools with materials out front to pass out to other parents about how to talk to your kid about race. And we had a wonderful evening forum that was packed out and displayed the talents of our youth. And I think that action is one that can be replicated around the country and already has been. This week, the teachers in Philadelphia have launched Black Lives Matter at School Week. So this whole week, they've had a different theme every day within the Black Lives Matter movement to highlight the different intersectional identities within the Black community and teach lessons and hold dialogues around those actions. And so that's already been a powerful example of bringing together families and labor in a common struggle. And I could see this type of movement flowering across the country, especially as police brutality just continues unabated, right? The next time we see a horrific murder of a black or brown body, I think it will further convince educators in other cities that we need to transform our schools into sites of resistance to everything that Trump stands for. And I really hope that is where our movement can go, because, you know, Trump emblazons his name on everything he owns. He got the Trump towers, the Trump golf courses, the Trump hotels. And I'd like to see our schools become public sites of resistance to all the bigotry that he stands for. You know, so the school reader boards here in Seattle said Black Lives Matter on them at many of the schools on our day. And I think if we keep at it, we can help to transform our schools to become these sites of resistance.
Yeah. Do you have specific tips from the work you've been doing in Seattle for educators and other places who want to start talking to people in their community, their students and their students' parents around particularly around issues of racism, but in general around the issues that their communities are facing?
Yeah, I mean, one is for fellow educators, it's really critical to form a caucus inside the union, right? To gather together like-minded social justice advocates in the union and begin to present your ideas to the broader union to help make your union strong enough to fight back against the privatization attacks and to help raise social issues like the Black Lives Matter movement inside the union. And oftentimes beginning with a study group is a good way to go. Getting a book to read. You know, in Chicago, the Social Justice Caucus there that won the election and took over the union began by reading Naomi Klein's book, The Shock Doctrine, and it was just a small study group. And now they have quite a bit of influence in that city. Right here, we recently held a study group on Kianga Yamada Taylor's book, From Black Lives Matter to Black Liberation. But finding a book that can bring people together to discuss their ideas and then talk about how we want to implement them in the union is critical. And then I think picking a couple of key issues that you can organize around that will bring in parents, students, and teachers. And here in Seattle, one of the main issues that we are rallying around right now is the fight for ethnic studies. And I would add gender studies as well. I think in this time where our president disparages Black Lives Matter, or our president is an open sexist and is a proud sexual assaulter, I think we need to teach our kids the truth and about the contributions to this country of people of color and of women and the struggles that they've been through. And so we are launching an initiative with the NAACP here in Seattle to demand that every school include ethnic studies. And we've seen huge benefits in studies. A recent study out of Stanford showed huge benefits academically for ethnic studies programs and raising graduation rates. And I really think that's something that needs to take off across the country.
And in terms of Betsy DeVos has not been confirmed yet. There are even, you know, some of the Democrats within Congress who have said, who have rubber stamped some of Trump's other nominees are saying that they're going to fight on hers. What can people who are following that, what can they do? What are people doing around that particular nomination?
Well, we need to fight as vigorously as possible of her confirmation, because she has absolutely no idea what she's doing with public education. She never went to public schools. Her kids didn't go to public schools. Her only association with the schools is her attempts to privatize them with her foundation. And, you know, during her confirmation hearings, they asked her questions and about her family foundation, because her family foundation has given millions to the Republican Party, but even more despicably has funded things like gay conversion therapy, which is a pseudoscience that is absolute atrocity in the way it psychologically abuses LGBTQ youth. And she has no business being anywhere near a public institution that is meant to nurture all of the kids in the United States. And so I think that we have to raise public protest. We have to agitate in our unions to make sure our unions are vocally opposing this and letting the politicians know there'll be consequences if they vote to confirm her, and joining local rallies and demonstrations against her confirmation, I think, is really important.
And lastly, how can people keep up with you?
My website is iamaneducator.com, and they can follow the work I do there or on social media. And most importantly, I think getting a subscription to Rethinking Schools and bringing social justice lessons into your classroom is the best way to stay connected to the movement.
Thank you for listening. Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Fulibois and support from the Nation Institute. Thanks to all of our partner publications, The Baffler, The Progressive, Truth Out in These Times. You can find out more on the web at necessarytrouble.org and reach me there if you'd like to become a partner publication. We will be back soon.